June 3rd, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by going to spingola.chatango.com. I am just one of a variety of hosts here at RBN, a network that has a very efficient, paid staff. They are the people who answer the phones, send out product, and enable everything to run as smoothly as possible. The sponsors whose commercials you hear pay for that staff and the many services they provide. I do not select the commercials that you hear during my program. Regarding my guest, I'm relatively tolerant and like to hear every aspect of a given issue. That tolerance does not imply acceptance or endorsement of everything that a guest may present. I believe that RBN listeners are sufficiently astute to draw their own conclusions about the subjects that we discuss on this program. We are not all going to arrive at the same conclusions, have the same educational opportunities or experiences, or share the same opinion about every event or issue. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundation. And that website is worldviewfoundations, with an S, .org. Rodney, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Deanna. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, thank you for joining me.
That website actually is wvfoundations.org.
Oh, yeah.
But, during the weekend, there were some problems accessing that website. I actually had to send an email for those listeners and those in the chat room. My regular email and the website was not operational sometime Friday through Sunday about 3:30, and that actually had to do with the provider. There wasn't any tampering or anything nefarious. They had some upgrades going on, and then we were getting ready to do the migration. We have a new design, new website, new design, much more user-friendly. I know that slide bar on our homepage really makes people, crazy. It makes me crazy, and so there's actually going to be a new website here in the next week or so. But the website was not accessible, and my email was not functioning. I guess the problem was linked or whatever. They gave me a whole bunch of technical jargon. But it's all operational now. The problem is if anybody sent me an email between, say, Friday night through Sunday, I did not get it, and I won't get it, apparently. They just kind of dropped off. So anyway, that's just by way of an announcement. And also just another housekeeping item, my other radio shows that I've been doing, with some of the individuals in Europe and such on the American Nationalist Network, that's going through a change. There is going to be there's some changes there. John Friend is no longer with the American Nationalist Association and the American Nationalist Network. He's decided to go off on his own. So we'll pick it up on the other side of it.
All right, so he resigned?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of balance concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and that website is wvfoundations.org. All righty. You were talking about the changes in the radio and John Friend resigning.
Our new home actually is going to be, people want to listen to our shows and our hosts. The host lineup will be the same. Obviously, John is going to do his own. I guess this is kind of a situation where he's going to go solo, and that's fine. The other hosts will all remain at the network, and the network will be based on our website, AmericanNationalistAssociation.org. Because the American Nationalist Network is owned by the American Nationalist Association. And when we chartered the American Nationalist Association, the network is a subsidiary, is a legal subsidiary of the association. And it's always been our desire and desire of the board to actually have the home of the network, you know, on the main website. And that's actually being developed now. We hope to get that, the initial site launched this week. So when people want to listen to our shows, they don't have to go to another network site such as Blog Talk or TalkShoe or anything like that. They would actually just go to our home website and listen to all of our programs and also see our documents and things of that nature. And so that's what's going to happen. So anyway,
okay. What is the website again? AmericanNationalistAssociation.org?
Yeah, it's all spelled out. Basically, www.AmericanNationalistAssociation.org. Now, that's not up. It will be up probably tonight or no later than tomorrow morning, and there will be, I guess you would call them, buttons where you can actually hear our programs. And, of course, that network lineup will be my two shows, the Nationalist Hour and Worldview Conversations, and then David Bailey's program and Robert Lloyd's program. And stay tuned. We actually have probably, we're working on having another host join the network here really exciting host. We're working on that right now, very soon. So, you know, things are moving, and you know, these things happen, and you know, philosophical differences develop, and this is all very amicable, and John's free to pursue his you know, his new format, you know, solo. But the American National Association and the American National Network is going to continue on the path that the, you know, the board has chartered.
Okay. Sounds great. All righty. So, you were going to talk about, well, you have a new Bund page, B-U-N-D.
Yeah. This was a project, I started, you know, hunting and pecking on it, about 8 months ago. As I started reading my grandmother's diaries, and in her diaries, she kept meticulous notes. And I always said, when you're looking at original source material, always, you know, I always like, you know, like reading women's diaries for a whole lot of different reasons. One, women tend to take meticulous details on issues that, you know, men wouldn't. I mean, if you want to, you know, you're looking at original sources, you know, men are good sources for different reasons, but women take meticulous details, such as, you know, surroundings, what was actually happening.
You mean when they're not slaving away in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant?
Well, contrary to a lot of people's opinions, that's women, you know, there's an old saying, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And so people need to be very, 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 very careful. If people want to look at some strong women in history, one need to look at, you know, one can look at Frances Folsom Cleveland. I mean, I can go through just in American history. I can also go into you know, European history as well. I mean, dare I say Queen Victoria? But I mean, for, you know, looking at original source doc, when I'm doing research and looking at original source documents, you know, I always like to look, you know, I obviously gather men's journals and diaries, and believe it or not, during the war, I've collected a whole lot of notes and copies of Wehrmacht soldiers, particularly on the Eastern Front, their diaries. They kept journals, those soldiers did, and then in particularly the soldiers that were assigned to anti-partisan duties, fighting the partisans. And they were later charged as, quote, war criminals. And a lot of people don't realize that this anti-partisan activity was later commingled into the so-called Einsatzgruppen trials, and they were allegedly tried for killing civilians. And, you know, someone that's wearing a civilian uniform and shooting at troop formations and engaging in sabotage, that's partisan activity, and that is, you can actually engage in anti-partisan activity under the Geneva Convention. So anyway, I looked at, you know, a whole lot of sources. I was reading my grandmother's diary, and in it, she was referencing, you know, getting ready and help prepare for Bund activities, particularly at Hindenburg Park, which was a park in one of the L.A. Suburbs of La Crescentia. Now it's not named Hindenburg Park anymore, because 1941, when the Bund was crushed at the onset of the war, anything that was affiliated with the Bund was seized, its assets were seized, they renamed anything German. As a matter of fact, in 1941, the Roman salute that U.S. children, I'm going to cover that in this paper, U.S. children used to do the Pledge of Allegiance by way of the Roman salute, just like, you know, people were using that same salute in Germany and in Italy and other nations. But so they expunged all of that. Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive decree and said that, you know, children could no longer engage in that Roman salute to salute the flag, and put their hand on the heart, which is kind of a weak gesture as opposed to the stronger, you know, Roman salute. But that got me interested. And I said, you know, the Bund, as I was looking at all of her notes and how active she was in the Bund, and, you know, she was active in the L.A. Bund, and then she actually moved to San Diego, and she was actually active in a Bund chapter there. The Bund chapter in San Diego was kind of a subchapter of the Bund chapter in Los Angeles. They worked real close together. When there was a large gathering, an organization meeting in L.A., people from San Diego would always trek up to Los Angeles. All the events at Hindenburg Park were always attended by the Bund chapters in Los Angeles and in San Diego. So I started researching this and just see how broad, because what you hear about the Bund is mainly you hear about Camp Siegfried, you hear about New York and New Jersey. And it was pretty clear to me that the Bund was much larger and was much more successful than what people are led to believe. And so I started digging into various files and reports and looking at the evolution of the Bund when it was first formed, looking how much it grew and developed. And like any organization, it started out rather small, local and regional, and then it grew just tremendously. And by the time, say, 1941, when the war started, it survived the imprisonment of its leader. They did these trumped-up charges on its leader and threw him into jail. They created these embezzlement charges, which its members never accepted, by the way. They were hoping just locking up their leader would crush it. That didn't crush it. The leaders knew that this was trumped-up charges. They used the war powers and Roosevelt's draconian war powers to raid the Bund, shut it down, lock up its members, put them in concentration camps, and then after the war, deport most of the leadership of the Bund and a lot of its members back to Germany, even ones that had acquired U.S. citizenship. But at the height of the Bund, in 1941, the Bund was active. Now, in 1941, remember, there was only 48 states. The Bund was active, had active chapters in 47 of the 48 states. That's how active they were, that's how large they were. They had, so that gives you an idea. They had about 25,000, and they had two-tiered members. I'll cover this in more greater detail. But they had upwards of over 120,000 to 130,000 members when you counted. They had the actual German-American Bund, the full members, but then they had a second tier, which was supporting memberships. When you counted all of the full members and the supporting memberships, they had well in excess between 120 and 130 to 140,000 members. I mean, that was tremendous. They never had, when they would open a camp or would have a camp gathering, they never had less than 10,000 attendees. Never did. But let's go back to how this was founded, because it's what you usually hear when you hear of the Hitler Channel, the History Channel, all this. They'll every once in a while will do a hit piece on the Bund. In fact, I have a couple of video excerpts on the Bund page on my website, and I have to put a note: don't listen to the narration, because the narration is so skewed and propagandized against the Bund, but the footage is excellent. One of those, it's about a 10-minute clip, is all Bund activities at the L.A. Bund in Southern California. It shows Camp Hindenburg, the big, large statue of President von Hindenburg at the Hindenburg Park, because there was a Camp Hindenburg, too. The Bund had a series of summer camps throughout the United States. I list them in the essay, and we'll go through that. They had a Camp Hindenburg in Wisconsin, which was much like Camp Siegfried and Camp, some of the ones in New Jersey as well. But if you go back and look at where the Bund came from, they just didn't pop up. They had a large array. They developed very locally and very regionally, and it grew nationally. It developed in 1924. And it started as the Free Society of Teutonia, and its first leader was Fritz Gisbel. And it started in none other than Chicago, Illinois. That's where what you would consider the Bund, that started in 1924, the Free Society of Teutonia. And he actually was a new immigrant, and he was actually an NSDAP member. And we'll pick it up on the other side of the break.
All righty. Be right back in 3 minutes.
Flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror, or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system and fire piston, or you just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today, toll-free at 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Visit CampingSurvival.com now and receive 5% off any purchase with the code FREEDOM. CampingSurvival.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and today he's talking about the American, the German-American Bund. I said it right this time. Instead of Bund. Bund. Okay. See, I'm not a German speaker.
Well, in 1926, Fritz Gisbel changed the name from the Free Society of Teutonia to, and remember now, he was a new, he founded it in, he was a new German immigrant from Germany to Chicago. And he had been a member of the National Socialist German Workers' Party in Germany. And, you know, bear in mind, the NSDAP in Germany was only about four and a half years old at that time in Germany. And then he had immigrated and came to the United States. But in 1926, he changed it. And he changed it to the National Socialistic Society of Teutonia, and the organization grew very rapidly in the Midwest, the United States. Keep in mind immigration, you know, in that region of the nation. It's important people understand there was a tremendous German American, you know, presence in that region of the United States. So that's not uncommon, but I think it's important that it really had a tremendous growth spurt under the name National Socialist Society of Teutonia, and it grew very, very rapidly. But in 1932, he changed its name again, and this time its name was changed to Friends of the Hitler Movement. Now, keep in 32, the NSDAP had won the 1932 German election with about just under 42% of the vote. In an election where there was about 35 parties on the ballot. And then the very the very next year when Hitler was named Chancellor of Germany, 1933, he changed the name again. Friends of the New Germany, you know, Fong for short, which is kind of interesting, Fong. Some people might have thought it was some sort of Asian organization. But in 1934, Fitz Gisbel, he returned to Germany. He went back to Germany. And this is interesting to note because, you know, I interviewed Gretel Heinz, one of the Germans who lived in the Third Reich. And there was this period after Hitler became chancellor and the NSDAP began, you know, renewing Germany, the tremendous economic boom that was happening in Germany. A lot of Germans were going home. And you can see this with Fritz Gisbel. And then, Gretel Heinz's father wanted to go back to Germany. And of course, they didn't do it until 1938. So he went back to Germany in 1934. And he was appointed, actually, the state secretary of the propaganda ministry. He worked for Joseph Goebbels in southern Germany. He actually worked in Munich. So in 36 is when it actually became the German-American Bund. The organization transformed into what we now call the German-American Bund. But that's the evolution. It began in 1924 as a free state of Teutonia. It had about two or three name changes. And then finally in 1936, it underwent its final name change. Now, it's kind of interesting. During the, as it was developing, you started having what I consider and what I write in my essay as this, the creation of fictitious reports. From the early on in its development, you started seeing it grow. I mentioned the tremendous growth spurt when it became the National Socialist Society, Socialistic Society of Teutonia. It grew very rapidly in the Midwest. And you started seeing it being monitored. And I posted a link on the Bund page to the FBI. You actually access the FBI files. You can see the FBI files. Old J. Edgar started getting preoccupied with, you know, this, which is basically was a social and charitable and fraternal organization. And they started trumping up and creating these false, these very false and bogus reports about the Bund. You see a history of them.
Right, so, because they were, of course, the FBI is a government agency, and well, sure. They were really going after anybody that was favoring or looking favorably at Germany. So it was amazing.
Sure. But you see the history here. It began very early, and you can see, and I've actually posted some of those reports, and I've made note of some of them in my essay, and then I put the links on my website. They were creating this very, very early. They were creating this, and these bogus reports and interviewing people, and they were basically making, it was targeted. And then, you know, even with all of that, Deanna, from early on, say about 1928, 1929, all through, you know, the 1930s, even when they actually imprisoned Fritz Kuhn, the leader of the German American, I'll get to him here very shortly, who's next, they still, could not shutter the development of the Bund and the growth of the Bund. It still just kept growing and developing, no matter how much the FBI and these other government and Jewish influenced organizations wrote these reports, they even commissioned academic reports to talk about how the Bund was basically an enemy alien front organization, and it just didn't wash. It didn't.
Amazing.
It didn't wash at all. Well, we'll go on. We'll get into Fritz Kuhn after the break.
All righty, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack, for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel body armor can stop every round, including hollow points and 308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and that website is wvfoundations.org. And let me just give the other one, American Nationalist Association.org, but it's not up yet, but will be at some point.
Here in a few days, and that'll be the home where you can listen to all of our shows and our materials and such, and it's being worked on. Let's talk about Fritz Kuhn, because you know he actually after the rapid development of the boom, you know, the various name changes, it was always one organization. It just went through a series of name changes under Fritz Gisbell before he, you know, from the time he was in arrived in Chicago in 1924, then he moved back to Germany in 1934 to accept the position as state secretary of the propaganda ministry. But Fritz Kuhn actually became what we would call the first leader of the German-American boom under that title, when they changed his name to the German-American boom. Now, Fritz Kuhn was born in Germany, and he moved to the United States. He arrived in 1927. He was a naturalized American citizen. He received his American citizenship in 1934. And interestingly, you know, he worked for the Ford Motor Company. He was a chemist with Ford, and he stayed with Ford until he left to become the national leader of the German-American Bund on a full-time basis. And that was in 1936. So that's how rapidly the Bund developed into such a tremendously successful large national organization that Fritz Kuhn was actually able to leave his job at Ford Motor Company to actually assume on a full-time basis Leadership of the German-American Bund. Now, he also, in addition to being the leader of the Bund, that was a kind of a two-step position. He was also editor of it. It published a weekly a publication called Wakening Call in the Observer, and that was based in Brooklyn. And by December of 1939, which was a height, you consider 1939 was a height of the Bund's growth and success, the federal government, they just went after Kuhn. There's no doubt they trumped up charges. They found him guilty and sentenced him in federal court to 2.5 to 5 years for grand larceny and forgery. They said that he had raised money for attorney's fees in Nassau County, New York, and the federal government. They said that Kuhn had used the money for his personal use, including a mistress, and they could, this so-called mistress was never, made. There was never any testimony by this witness. They just alleged it, and the Bund members saw this for what it was. And what's interesting is these are all state charges. I think it's really interesting that the Fed stepped in and charged him on charges that should normally have been charged in state court. It's just fascinating. He was an American citizen. He wasn't a foreign national. At that time, he had already received his naturalization, so he was a United States citizen. But the feds preempted, if he truly was guilty of these crimes, all of these crimes were state crimes. This was Bund was an organization. Its headquarters were in New York. It was under New York. That by that time, by the way, initially when Fritz Kuhn was working part time, it was a part time position. Before his full time, the Bund was headquartered in Michigan while he still worked at Ford Motor Company. And then when he became full-time, he moved it to New York in Brooklyn. Well, anyway, he would go on. The prosecutor who prosecuted, the federal prosecutor who prosecuted Fritz Kuhn was Thomas E. Dewey, the former future governor of New York and future two-time presidential loser to FDR and Truman. And, the Bund members saw this for what it was. They were trying to, the feds were trying to embarrass Kuhn. They brought up the mistress. They said he was misusing Bund funds. And the Bund never accepted this. The Bund, continued on after this case. And it was only the onset of the war that which the feds actually seized their assets and redistributed their assets and broke up the Bund. Now, Fritz Kuhn, after he served his, quote, prison sentence, he and other Bund members were put in these American concentration camps and then promptly deported to Germany after the war. And he actually died in Munich, and I'll cover that as we get later. But what made the Bund successful? You study it. You go back and look in the documents. If you go to my Bund webpage, I actually have a series of Bund. There's a whole series of photographs, old photographs of Bund activities, Bund posters, and there's a lot of stats that I put in there of how, the Bund, what they were able to successfully do. And the Bund successfully blended German and American, patriotism. In fact, I want to go back to the introduction of the essay, and I talk about some of the what they would talk about when people would come to a Bund camp, for instance. In their brochures, say for Camp Siegfried, which was the most famous one, when the press wanted to do a hit piece on the Bund, they would always go and highlight Camp Siegfried. They always tried to put a negative connotation on it. But the Bund, they successfully built its own national community in the United States, and much to the envy and opposition of, groups. And what's interesting, who opposed the Bund initially? Jews, communists, and even the Ku Klux Klan showed up and protested the opening of the German-American Bund camp at Camp Burkholdt in New Jersey. The Klan even protested them early on. And, in summers, all over, from over New York State and all over the country, wherever there was a Bund camp, people would show up. And you had thousands of people would show up at these Bund events. And some of the brochures they would print, you would have some of them. You will meet people, who think and act just like you do. It was basically a development of a national community among like-minded individuals, much like we see, developing among, other, nationalist groups and ethnicities here in the United States. Now, did they have pictures of Hitler up? Yes, they did. Did they have swastika flags up? Yes, they did. The swastika flag, remember, was the national flag of Germany, and Hitler was the leader of Germany, but that's all, and we'll talk about this as I move on on these bogus reports. That's all that the media, the Jewish media and the government reports would fixate on. There was actually far more American flags and pictures of George Washington and even in some cases Andrew Jackson in these Boone activities and in Boone meetings and such than there were swastika flags and pictures of Hitler. But they would always zero in and take pictures of the swastika flag and pictures of Hitler and say, see, these are enemy agents, they're spies. And they would even talk about the Boone. The Boone had a children's unit, much like the Hitler Youth, and they would talk about how the uniforms were imported from Germany when actually the uniforms were actually manufactured at clothiers. Some of them were manufactured at clothiers in New York, and some of them were manufactured at clothiers in Los Angeles. But this is what they wrote in these bogus reports. And these reports were aimed to basically try to divide the American public. They were designed to try to break up the momentum that the Boone was enjoying. People were joining the Boone and were branching out. You had other, what you would call ethno-nationalist groups that were supporting the Boone. They would have cooperate. You know, the Irish groups were supporting the Boone as well. You know, I talked about the two-tiered membership. Structure of the Boone. You have the actual German American Boone, official membership. Then you have the official supporter memberships. Those were, Irish Americans. They were, Scottish American. You had this tremendous growth and development over a very short period of time. And of course, what really, really, really freaked people out is when the Boone marched into Madison Square Garden with about 20 to 25,000 people and held the largest, rally of what we can only be described as an ethno-nationalist organization. They were all, spit and polish, and everything they said. And by the way, the Boone published a book of all of his speeches at the Madison Square Garden rally, and that's published. It's on my website. It's on the Boone page. They published a book. There's also, I have some of the audio clips, extended audio clips of those speeches. And
now, what year was this when they did this big rally? Was that 34?
1939. February 20th, 1939 was the Madison Square Garden rally. And of course, you had Jewish militants tried to disrupt the rally. They got into the rally. They rushed the stage, tried to attack Fritz Kuhn and other members of the Boone leadership, and they were promptly stopped by the Boone security. And if you listen to the newsreels, you look at some of the newsreels at the time, they twisted that whole. Here you had a Boone rally. You had Boone members and Boone supporters going to a very well-developed and well-polished rally. And you had these Jewish militants, disrupting it and attacking the speakers and the news reports that were put on by, the Jewish, Jewish American media made the attackers, the militants, out to be hapless victims of Nazi bullies. It's just absolutely incredible what was happening. And what we're seeing, as I get in more to the essay of this essay, is you see the test case. The Boone was the test case on how the FBI, the U.S. government, and other agencies would react and treat and attempt to stamp out any sort of ethno-nationalist type of organization. They would lie.
And yet, in 1933, they did nothing except support the Madison Square Garden rally of the Jews who were waging war, calling for economic sanctions against Germany. You had nothing but support, nothing but the media covering them. They could do no wrong. And yet they were an ethnic group or so-called ethnic ideological group who were actually wanting to have violence, because that's what happened.
Well, absolutely, and here's the comparison. The Jews, the World Congress, held that Madison Square Garden rally in 1933. The German-American Boone was very active and very operational at that time. You did not see them sneak into their rally in Madison Square Garden and attempt to rush the stage and disrupt their rally. Where, you had, I'm sure, it's without a doubt, and there you can go on YouTube and actually, punch in the search engine, German-American Boone, Madison Square Garden rally, you can actually see an official, what they would call a news reel clip that was being played in American theaters. So it used to be when you went to a movie theater in the United States, you would see one movie, and then you would see a newsreel, and then you would see the main feature. You actually saw two movies and then a newsreel in between the two movies. You would see there's a newsreel depicting the German-American Bund rally in Madison Square Garden on February 20th, 1939, and you can see the narrator talking about, you know, this is what these Nazis do, beat up defenseless people, and it shows them protecting Fritz Kuhn from this Jewish militant who is no doubt a member of the Jewish World Congress, who had snuck into the German-American Bund rally in an attempt to disrupt it and to attack, you know, and to disrupt the speakers. But you did not see the Bund doing that at the rally that they held, calling for an economic boycott and the crippling and the end of National Socialist Germany. And, you know, bear in mind, in 1933, National Socialist was in a coalition government with the German Nationalist Party, and they weren't even, you know, Hitler wasn't even the president of Germany. The president of Germany was still a very strong position. The president of Germany any time could have dismissed the government and called a new election. I mean, you know, it was just absolutely incredible what was taking place, and this all took place with the blessing of the U.S. government, and which was infested by communists by that time, infested by communists and Jews.
Amazing.
So the boom goes on. I want to talk, you know, how successful they are, how they were. You get in, you start looking at what they did, and you start looking at their events and the impacts and how they were actually received, and you have to actually go down and you have to look beyond Madison Square Garden. People actually are too focused on Madison Square Garden and the Boone camps. They actually blended German and American patriotism, and bear in mind, even to this day, Americans of German descent still account for a tremendous demographic percentage of the American, population. And back then it was even larger. But in 1937, the Bund ratified its constitution in a New York meeting, and they declared that its members would, quote, uphold and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States and, quote, remain worthy of our Germanic blood, our German fatherland, and our German brothers and sisters. Now, notice first they said they would uphold the Constitution and laws of the United States. So right within their Constitution, they're forbidding themselves from carrying out anything that would be against the Constitution. So they couldn't be an enemy alien organization that are loaded with spies and are working against the interests of the United States, because they're right out the gate. The very opening paragraph of their Constitution, they have to obey the laws and Constitution of the United States. At the same time, they are saying they're going to remain worthy of their ethnic heritage. There's no conflict there at the same time. They went on and talked about, a lot of people look at these old Boone parades, and they can, and I always caution people, don't look at history. Don't go back and look at news clips and old photographs from the 1930s or the 1920s, and don't look at it through the lenses of 2013. You have to look at it through the times, and I'm going to talk about their use of the swastikas and the flags of the time. I talked about it briefly earlier. Swastika was the national flag of Germany at the time, and actually the swastika did not become the national flag of Germany when Hitler became chancellor in 1933. Not at all. It didn't actually become it was a co-flag for after Hitler became chancellor. The swastika flag was flown alongside the red, white, and black tri-bar national flag of Germany. Swastika flag did not become the official national flag of Germany until late 1935. But anyway, it talks about the Bund Constitution explained that the swastika is our fighting symbol and had already become the sign of recognition of Aryan nationalism in many other countries. It talks about the greeting of the outstretched right arm and hands, talking about the Roman salute, which means the same thing is used in all of these movements. Now, this is where I talk about, this was already happening in U.S. schools and had been happening for years. And I put pictures on my Boone page and in my essay where you have pictures in U.S. schools of flag salutes in the classroom with this Roman salute. I also have older photographs that I'm trying to, scan and preserve the resolution of Native American schools, Indian schools, Deanna, where they're doing a flag salute outside. And you have all these Native American Indian children with the Roman salute. And these,
right.
these pictures were taken in 1938 and 1939 at the, you know, because they used to round up the Native American Indian children and ship them off to boarding schools.
And they still do that.
Oh, sure, sure. So anyway, so I have those pictures, except those pictures are kind of grainy, and when I scanned them the first time, they just weren't, you know, the resolution wasn't good, but there's just no doubt that this, you know, this mean, what they call Nazi salute, was widely used in the United States, and had been. It wasn't until Roosevelt's executive in 1941.
All righty. We do need to take a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the 5-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay. All the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley. An area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to TerraVim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of the Worldview Foundations. And we're talking today, he's talking today about the German-American Bund. And it was a very, very important group. And they had a lot of support, not just from the German-Americans, but from a lot of other people, too.
The Fritz Kuhn was pulled in before the Committee on Un-American Activities to testify. And, you know, as we're, you know, it's interesting, you know, people think of the House Un-American Activities Committee as going after the Hollywood communists and such, which, you know, they could have been a lot more proactive and effective than they were. But they also hauled in Fritz Kuhn, you know, they actually targeted him before they targeted, you know, the communists back in the 30s. They called him in 1938. And under oath, they wanted to know the membership and membership requirements and such. And he told them that at that particular time in 1937 or 38 that he was hauled in. But to go back and look in the date, that the membership of the Bund, you know, the actual official membership was about 20,000 to 25,000. And then the membership as official supporters was another 100,000. So that would have put the membership in 1937-38 at about 120,000 active members and supporters across the United States. And he also testified under oath that the Bund was absolutely strongly opposed to the declared Jewish boycott of Germany. And that didn't sit too well with the chairman of the committee for obvious reasons. He also, they asked him what the membership criteria was. That was it restricted to only Germans? And Kunz corrected him and said, no, you know, Americans of German descent or any white American, period. So that actually would account for the tremendous support that, you know, that was crossing over to the Bund, you know, from the Irish, from the Scots, and from other, you know, we call ethno groups in the United States at the time. The Bund had this transnational ideology that united people. It was not just in major cities, but they also had a lot of rural support in rural towns, you know, from Arkansas to California to Connecticut to Michigan. You have all these sub-chapters in their GALs. You know, they had support, and like I said earlier on, they were active. They had active organizations in 47 of the 48 states right up until 1941. Now, they divided the organizationally. The Bund adopted kind of the NSDAP model. They had GALs or districts. And so, you know, they had the GAL East, they had GAL West, which would have been California, GAL Midwest, then they had the GAL Ost, which would have been New York, and then they also had GAL Midwest. So they had those regions divided up, and each one of those regions actually had a GAL leader, a district leader. Now, out west, out in California, where my family is from, Herman Schwinn was the GAL West, and he was based in Los Angeles. And I have photographs of him on the page, on the Bund page and in the essay, and you see pictures of Herman Schwinn, and also you have pictures of Fritz Kuhn and Herman Schwinn at Hindenburg Park in Los Angeles.
Okay. We are going to our top of the hour 60-second break. We will be right back after station ID and a word from our sponsors.